With the senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th yield. He does proceed.
Hey, Senator. It's good to see everybody back. We could probably start from the beginning and...
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Barrie, for what purpose do you rise?
I have a motion to move the previous question.
Mr. President, I have a substitute motion.
Send your motion forward, Senator.
Mr. President, I have a substitute motion. Mr. President, I have a substitute motion. President, I have a substitute motion.
Senator, you cannot substitute the previous question motion.
Mr. President, this motion takes precedence on Rule 72 of the previous question motion just offered.
Secretary, read the script. Secretary, read the motion.
Motion for the previous question pursuant to Rule 84 of the Missouri Senate, quote, shall the main question be now put, close quote. Signed, Senators Tom Dempsey, David Sater, Ron Richard, Brian Nieves, Brad Lager, David Pierce, Gary Romine, Mike Cunningham, Jay Wasson, Ed Emery, Will Krause, Brian Munslinger, Mike Kehoe, Dan W. Brown, John Lamping, Doug Leibla, Wayne Wallingford, Kurt Schaefer, Mike Parson. Ryan Silvey. Eric Schmidt.
Madam Secretary, call the roll on the previous question.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey.
Aye.
Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kavanaugh, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce,
aye.
Richard, Romine, Sater,
aye.
Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Silvey, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from Green, your vote. Senator from Green votes no. By a vote of 21 ayes, 9 noes, the motion for the previous question has been sustained. Madam Secretary, call the roll on the underlying motion.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey.
Aye.
Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kavanaugh, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce,
aye.
Richard, Romine, Sater,
aye.
Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Silvey, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
By your vote of 23 ayes, 7 noes, the bill by the senator from Barrie has passed. Senator from Newton.
Without objection, the Senate will order business of message in the House of Representatives. I ask the Secretary please read the message.
Secretary, please read the messages from the House. Please read the messages from the House, if you have them.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate. The House has passed Section 7.015 for an International Trade and Investment Office in Israel, Section 7.115 for funding new and expanding industry training programs and basic industry retraining programs, and Section 7.120 for transfer to the Missouri Works Job Development Fund. 2. Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill No. 2007, the objections of the Governor thereto notwithstanding. in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Also, the attached are certified copies of the roll calls pertaining to the above-named sections of the Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 2007. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate. The House has passed Section 3.260 for the Missouri Telehealth Network for the purpose of creating and implementing four extension for community health care outcomes programs. Section 3.261 for a program designed to increase international collaboration and economic opportunity located at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And Section 3.265 for the Missouri Rehabilitation Center. Section 3.266 for the Centers for Neighborhood Initiative located at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Section 3.210 for the University of Central Missouri for the Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics Initiative. 2. Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 2003. The objections of the Governor thereto notwithstanding, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Also, attached are certified copies of the roll calls pertaining to the above-named sections of the Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 2003. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has passed House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 1261, the objections of the Governor thereto notwithstanding, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Also, Mr. President, the attached is a certified copy of the roll call on House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 1261. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has passed House Bill 1359, the objections of the Governor thereto notwithstanding, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Also, Mr. President, the attached is a certified copy of the roll call on House Bill 1359. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumbliss, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the Senator from the 7th.
The Senator from the 7th yield. He does. Proceed.
Good evening, Senator.
How are you, Senator?
Or almost good morning. I note that we have a full complement of folks at the press table, some of whom, such is the nature of term limits, that some of the folks, one of whom we honored earlier today, have seen far more of what we just saw in the Missouri Senate than you or I have to this point in our careers in the Senate, and hopefully than we ever will. And that's the previous question motion.
Well, the interesting thing is you and I both served in the House, so
we
have actually experienced quite a few.
Previous question motions.
First time in 2 years in this chamber, and I'm struck by last night's retirement ceremony about what a different place this is. What a wonderful job and an incredible opportunity it is to serve in this chamber. And the reason for that is the open and free debate. And we just witnessed the majority party shut down debate in this chamber.
Yes.
For the first time in your and my career here. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for our constituents. It's unfortunate for our colleagues. It's unfortunate for the leadership of our chamber. Because I believed up until about 3 minutes ago, we have an incredible relationship. We discussed things until we got to a compromise, and I believe that we just changed the nature of this room. And I don't see any other way to change it back other than to chart a path forward that reminds them consistently that actions have consequences.
Third law of Newton's third law. And I'll tell you, there were some that felt, and I'm not saying necessarily unreasonably, there were some that felt that because of the manner in which this issue came to a TAFP vote during session in May, while at the same time some other matters did not come to a TAFP vote, that the fact that this particular bill received discussion tonight in veto session was not something that was contemplated to be part of what was discussed previously. And I don't know anybody contemplated that at the time. I really don't want to engage in revisionism here. The point is, this is an extraordinary event. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary when, out of all the bills that are filed,
But between the House bills that come over from the House and the Senate bills that are filed in the Senate, out of all those bills, we as a body respect the prerogative of various members, both whether they be members of the majority or the minority, to debate the matters of the day to the extent that they believe appropriate, and sometimes indefinitely. And that is the prerogative of every senator. And that's something that, frankly, until the era of term limits, had not really been dispensed with since the Civil War.
No, I want to thank the senator from Green and the senator from Buchanan for upholding this institution, for understanding that this is a place of debate and discussion, and that this is not the House, and that as soon as this becomes an easy thing to do, we will become the House. And that's not a place that any of us decided that we wanted to be when we ran for this office. And I can't understand how this issue has risen to the DEFCON 5 that it has, that it's brought us to this precipice of where we're at.
This issue of all issues, a bill to limit a woman's right to choose an abortion without having to wait 72 hours, without, in the case of somebody who lives on the other side of the state from the one clinic we have in our state now as a result of all the other regulations that have passed, just the drive time alone, the time missed from work alone, the lodging expense alone.
And here's what's sad. Right now, we should be hearing from the senator from Nottoway and his final goodbye. We should be hearing from the senator from the 10th and her final goodbye. We should be using this as an opportunity to end this veto session in a positive way so we can take the next 3 months to gather our thoughts and get ready for the next legislative session. We should be celebrating the careers that are ending the night. How do you think the senator from the 10th feels that her career is ending by the majority party saying that we didn't get enough tonight? We got every bill that we brought up passed that we wanted to. The one bill that the minority party stands up and says, we don't want this bill to go forward, and they PQ her.
I got to tell you, we had at least two other bills that I think got actually more airtime on the floor today, the gun bill and maybe also the ag bill, although I'm not certain on that. That wasn't maybe debated quite as long as the 72-hour bill was. But, you know, the point is, I got to tell you, I got folks that are awfully upset, that either those bills advanced. And, of course, I'm sure that had they not, others would have been dealing with others who were equally upset on the other side of those issues. And I get that. But the point is, that's what we have the Senate for.
Right.
That's what we have the Senate for. That's what we have this process for. You know, of all the issues, out of every Senate bill that was filed, out of every House bill that came over to the Senate, we picked one and only one to receive this kind of extraordinary treatment. Not the first time a woman's right to choose has been the subject of a previous question motion in this state. I don't know why it is that we seem to fixate on it to that extent. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I didn't want to sit down in May. I really didn't. I mean, it was actually one of the most difficult things I've had to do in my career in public service. I actually didn't sit down. I put my microphone down and I walked to the back because I wasn't going to sit down. I wasn't happy with the outcome. And don't get me wrong, maybe some would say I was trying to have my cake and eat it too. You can't kill everything. I get it. But look, we were dealing with a lot of very bad ideas that we had spent a lot of time resisting through debate. And we did our best. We did our best. And I'll tell you what tonight's developments demonstrate was, unfortunately, there was never any other outcome that was going to occur on this. And in some ways, it's vindicating. But it gives me no pleasure to say that. I'd much rather not be vindicated on this and have this not be going into law.
So what else was there to complete tonight? Do you know what else there was that you're intending to do?
You know, there were some messages read in from the House, I believe. And for all I know, I think there are a few budget bills that haven't been brought up in this chamber yet. So you've got some things in. I mean, you've got some important legislation, some important budget legislation that's still out there. And ironically enough, one of which is, I believe, Alternatives to Abortion Services, line 5.165. Well, the circumstances under which that's going to come to the floor are different now after a PQ than they would have been before. And if we covered that one and I forgot, I stand corrected, but I believe the line items in 2, 5, and 7. And don't get me wrong, I'll tell you this. You and I are talking right now, and I'll say our minority leader is off the floor now. I don't know whether there's going to be further proceedings or not, or what the circumstances of those would be. I'm not going to go there. But look, and I'll say this to members of the body who have legislation that they still want to bring forward. Don't take the fact that the senator from the 7th and I are standing up here doing this.
Mr. President, I note the absence of a quorum.
Quorum has been noted. Please summon the senators to the chamber.
Mr. President, proceed, Senator.
No, Senator, I'll decide when we proceed.
Have a seat.
Quorum is present. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
What I was about to say at that moment, which, what I was about to say at that moment is, folks, you know, we had some messages right in. I know there are some budget items left. If folks want to continue the conversation, I suggest they visit with our caucus leader, since she's not on the floor at the moment. And I don't know, maybe that's it. We're all done. We all go home at this point. But check in with the minority leader, I would say. You know, at this point, my willingness to terminate this inquiry depends entirely on whether folks can come to a consensus as to what, if anything, else is to be taken up in veto session. I know that we've had some other House bills. In fact, I've got a tray full of House bills. As I stand here, I don't know how many of them have come out of the House. But, you know, the reality is, I think we all know from I shouldn't say we all know, you and I haven't been in the chamber, but from past precedent, that when the prerogative of debate in the Senate is shall I say, inhibited, there's probably a better word for it, by virtue of the procedural mechanism that we just witnessed, that those against whom it is employed will typically do what they feel that they need to do in the face of what, you know, might arguably be referred to as a nuclear option. Look, we have a system that provides checks and balances, and this body is meant to function in a particular way. And I understand that much as that there are those of us who feel that the previous question motion that we just saw was an abuse of that, I'm sure others would say that the filibuster that preceded it was an abuse of that. And you know what? Collectively, we're all going to have to wade through that and work through that, because the reality is we are going to have to find a way to do business in this state, possibly yet in this veto session, but certainly when we come back in 2015, when there are going to be a lot of important topics and conversations still on the docket. And it's very unfortunate that when we all come back in 2015, that this will be, if not the last, among the very last developments in this particular General Assembly, as we all at some point head home or elsewhere in the case of some of us.
I think as a minority party, we have done a good job, perhaps not a great job, but a good job of standing up for the things that are core principles to us, but still allowing the majority to move the legislation that's important to them.
We cut taxes by $620 million this year.
We've had Second Amendment rights bills come through. This bill.
We had a big gun bill today that I know your city had objections to. It's not like legislation hadn't been able to pass. In fact, in some ways, it's been able to. Well, I actually think all in all, in this, what, the 97th General Assembly, here in the Senate especially, I actually think until this point, the process has been quite good, and in some ways, perhaps even better than in the near recent past. But here we are tonight on this.
So what are some of the recourses if we chose to walk down the road of recourse? No more unanimous consents. Is that something within the power of the minority? No more unanimous consent for introduction of special guests. No more unanimous consent for a variety of motions. We could split all of the gubernatorial appointments starting in January, where every single one has to be voted on separately instead of doing it in a slate that we do. I think our cooperation in this chamber has been taken for granted. And I think that the fact that we have been supportive of the majority party to the extent that we can without violating the core principles of the party that we represent being here, I think that what we just saw is a direct slap in the face of that relationship. And whenever our minority leader, who is her last hour of her career of 8 years of cooperating and working together and doing some monumental things, passing the criminal code, that is how she is going to go out, is an unfortunate circumstance at best and a travesty at worst.
And we'll see what yet unfolds, but, you know, I got to tell you, I had a conversation the weeks following the end of session in which somebody who feels very strongly about a woman's right to choose expressed to me her grave disappointment that House Bill 1307, the 72-hour waiting period, came to a vote. Okay. And in hindsight, I'm not sure there's anything that we could have done to stop it. But regardless, what I was told was, in essence, and if you remember, I think I held the floor for maybe 2 hours that night. Then there was a recess. Conversations were had. We came back, and at that point, in essence, the filibuster was over. In fact, I remember reading accounts by some of our friends in the press that characterized this only a two-hour filibuster. You know, not a very good try, Senator Sifton, was sort of the implication of it. And this person said to me, you know what, that was no Wendy Davis, the legislator in Texas, and there's been an article about her recently, about her personal experiences, but who filibustered for 8 hours, about the length of time that the senator from the 10th would have had to. She took the floor at about 10 p.m. tonight, before we had a change, and whether that's fair or not, separate question. But, you know, the point is, at least in Texas, Wendy Davis got to stand and talk for 8 hours. In Texas, Wendy Davis got to stand and talk for 8 hours. And in fairness, now, and I'll say this, on the other side of that is, during session, there was approximately 16 hours of debate on this bill. There was. But all I will say is, I think people are pretty upset.
What I think happened here tonight, and a lot of our colleagues don't realize it, is that the majority party submitted some of their power as well. When each senator has the ability to stand up here in an open forum and filibuster a bill until they can no longer go, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, that's the power of a senator. And when the leadership of this chamber is allowed to take that power away, every single senator's diminished. Every single one of them. In the Republicans, even though you're a Republican and even though you're in the majority, your power as a senator derives from the fact that you are an independent actor in this room. And the second that you start to give that over to leadership priorities, you lose your power as a senator and you diminish the power of the Senate.
Well, and I'll say, you know, we had a bunch of messages read in. Presumably there's some other House bills coming over. And if I'm somebody who's in the building right now who feels very strongly that some of these things ought to move, I'd be asking the question, look, you know, where's my PQ? You know, we've had one. What's so special about that bill and not this bill or the other bill? And that's something, when we talk about implications on both sides, this is something that others in the bill are going to have to deal with. And I realize that's why there was a certain degree of reluctance to go here. And I get that. And I also realize it's probably better done earlier in the evening than later. But we are where we are. It's lamentable. I'm not sure in hindsight that it was avoidable. I think feelings on both sides of this issue were just that strong. But the question will be moving forward, what are things going to look like? And I'm not going to stand here tonight or tomorrow morning here in about 3 minutes and project too much into the future on that. I will say, in part, because it is our caucus's leader who is retiring from the Senate due to term limits, you know, we don't know, frankly, what our caucus is going to look like. We don't even know who's going to be in the Senate. I mean, we've got a few competitive elections out there. So there's a lot that remains to be seen.
Here's what I want to do. I think first off, we need to take a night to cool off because I'm upset over this action, and I don't think that making decisions right now is probably going to be in the best long-term interest of myself or of our caucus. But what I do believe is that we should make a concerted effort to sit down after we've had a chance to digest this and reflect upon it and talk with senators from the 17th, senator from the 3rd, senator from the 23rd, and what is the next 2 years going to look like? What does this mean for the relationship between the majority and the minority party in this chamber when we start in January of 2015? Because if this is an indication of how this relationship is going to deteriorate then our cooperation in how this chamber runs is going to be in question. And if the majority party thinks that our cooperation isn't necessary to make this a functional Senate, then perhaps we should begin from a position of demonstrating what that looks like to have a dysfunctional household. That's not the choice I want to make. I know that's not the choice you want to make, and I hope that's not the choice that the majority wants to make. But what we just saw does not lead me to believe that right now in this moment, we have another choice than that direction. And I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that when I wake up tomorrow and I have conversations with my friends, who I truly do count them all of everybody in this chamber I count as my friend, and that's someone who I care about. And we talked last night at the retirement party how we're a family, and how sometimes we're a dysfunctional family, but we're a family in that we share in each other's successes and failures, and we do the best to get to know one another. You know, we're one of the smallest senates in the country, and we're one of the only senates that sit in a nonpartisan fashion, where we sit next to members of other parties. And that's a special thing that we have here in the state of Missouri that makes this chamber different from other chambers. And I think it's had good results. And I don't want to see my relationships diminished because of parliamentary procedures that is advancing an agenda that we feel so strongly about that we're willing to stand up and try to stop it.
You know what? That's a great point. And let me say this. One of the things I'm most proud of as a Missourian is that our Senate is the one legislative body in the United States where we do not sit Democrats on one side of the aisle, Republicans on the other side of the aisle. And for anybody who has observed this, how this chamber works on an even casual basis, is going to quickly discern it's awfully hard sometimes to tell who's coming from which side of the aisle, because we stick to the issues. And we debate the merits of the bill, and we, I think, for the most part, manage to avoid doing it in a partisan tone. That said, I do need to seize on this opportunity, and sort of back to where today started. We don't have special guests during veto. Certainly right now I wouldn't be in the business of asking for unanimous consent for just about anything in this room, but I will say, I note that we have one outgoing leader of our caucus, the senator from the 10th. We also have another former leader of our caucus who is joining us in the Senate here this evening, former state senator, the Honorable Maida Coleman, from the city of St. Louis, I see, has joined us, and we are very much honored by her presence. Haven't had the chance to visit with her about whether there were any PQs under her watch. For all I know, there might have been. I see that she is nodding. In any event, I lament that I missed the chance to.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 15th, for what purpose do you seek recognition? Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Sorry to interrupt the debate. I did just want to remind folks, I don't know how much longer we will be here, but as the clock has turned to a new day here, it is past midnight, it is September 11th, and I don't know what our schedule will be like tomorrow, if we'll be together or not, but I did think it was appropriate for us to pause, even though we are having a robust debate and having disagreements among one another. We are very blessed to live in a country where we're able to do that, and we're able to do that freely. We have the right to speak. We have the right to live in a country that grants us a lot of liberty, granted by our Creator, but in a country where we can exercise that. And, you know, I think we all remember where we were that day when we saw the planes crashing into the World Trade Center, the two buildings, them crumbling to the ground, and the shock that we all felt. And as we continue to face new threats around the world, we live in a world of danger, but as Americans, I think we should all remember the thousands of people that lost their lives on September 11th in 2011. We'll ask my colleagues to join me in a moment of silence for those who lost their lives on September 11th.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you for noticing the time. Let's all exercise a moment of silence for those who are lost. Thank you, Senator. Senator from 7th had the floor. Had an inquiry from the Senator from the 1st. Proceed.
Thank you. Well, leave it to the Senator from the 15th to bring some levity, some perspective to the circumstances. And we are blessed to be here, and we're blessed to have the servicemen who are somewhere halfway around the world right now making sure that we're free to stand here on this floor and have these debates.
The Upper West Side in Manhattan talked about them on the floor here
before.
He's in Roanoke, Virginia these days, for all I know he may be listening. My father had youth. He paid for a lot of his expenses hustling pool and started smoking at age 9, resulted in, not astonishingly, a lung transplant by age 50-something, more than 10 years ago. But when he was a young man in New York City, 60s, he would bike all around the island. And he has recounted to me experience coming to southern Manhattan, looking down into enormous pits and being captivated by everything that was going on. And of course, World Trade Towers were constructed out of those pits that my father looked down into when he was young, and having no idea that one day he would again be able to see down into those pits under the most unimaginably tragic of circumstances. I never been a New Yorker. I have lived in Washington, D.C., but I, by virtue of my father and his brother, who still lives in Hillsdale, New Jersey, just outside of New York City when he's not in Florida, voting Republican, I should mention. I've always felt a great affinity for New York, and I just remember the conversation that I had with my father and with his brother and the immediate aftermath of those attacks. People that had grown up in New York, a friend of mine who at the time was a lawyer on Broad Street, which is actually south of Wall Street, New York, he and his colleagues spent most of the day that day in a basement. It was several hours before he was able to get access to a phone to call out. His wife, also a classmate of mine at the University of Michigan, along with him, his wife was actually a crisis and grief counselor. She was trained as a crisis and grief counselor, and it just happened that September 11th, 2001 was her first day on the job at the hospital that was the closest to the site of the World Trade Towers. And long story short, she was in counseling as a result of that experience herself. She, a counselor who was involved in the process on that day. I still remember Scott Casanova, who's actually now, I actually knew it when he and I were both in high school, and he was an associate with our firm at the time. He is now actually the general counsel of a fairly substantial college system in our state. I remember vividly Scott Casanova was wearing a yellow button-down polo that day. He told me that two planes had crashed into the World Trade Center, and of course at that point a lot of us were still uncertain what that really meant. And I remember that Harry Bechtold, another former colleague of mine, started in the same department on the same day. Harry was the one who came in to say, did you hear that the Pentagon got bombed, was the word that she used, because at that point we didn't know what had happened there either. And we actually had another young associate on the floor, Eric Enlow, and actually in the fall of 99, Carrie and I started together, and in the fall of 2000, Scott and Eric started together in the litigation department at what was then Blackwell Sanders Peeper Martin in St. Louis. And Eric's father actually worked in the Pentagon and was in the Pentagon when the plane hit, in a different part of it, but he was there. And so it was a very harrowing day for a great many people, certainly in New York and in Washington, D.C., and those who had loved ones on the planes and in the buildings. But among the people that I was around that day, certainly Dan, who was in a basement on Broad Street, and Eric, whose father was in the Pentagon at the time of the attack, of the people that I interacted with that day, those were the ones that felt it even more viscerally than the rest of us. And that was, I mean, it was funny, challenging for everybody. What I assume you remember.
Well, you remember
hearing the news.
I tell you, since I was 22 or 23 years old, I've taken a pilgrimage to Manhattan every year. I think I'm 38 now, so every year for 15 years I go to New York, usually with my wife, and we'll catch a Broadway show and we'll just enjoy the city. I, you know, kind of recharge my cultural battery and we just enjoy the city. And so I remember being at the top of the Empire State Building, looking at Manhattan to the south and seeing the World Trade Center standing there. And I took a really nice picture of my wife with the Trade Centers behind her, and this was the year of Summit 2001, and was very emotionally affected, as everybody was. I mean, we were all New Yorkers that day, and it was very traumatic to witness it and to see it and to have a national conscious about that hurt that was going on. But I'll tell you, it's something uplifting. And fantastic moments happen in your life sometimes when you don't expect them to happen. And one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of, you know, Freud talks about this oceanic feeling, where occasionally you can be in a group and the entire group feels the same emotion, and it's magnified by the sharing of that emotion by the number of people that are there. And this moment happened at Arrowhead Stadium before Chiefs game. It was the first Sunday after 9/11.
Yeah.
And the NFL had decided that the games will go on.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that the New York Giants were playing the Kansas City Chiefs. And I will never forget, as long as I live, our mayor, Emmanuel Cleaver, was, and I don't know if he was actually still mayor at the time. He may have just came out of office, but he was the mayor. He gave an invocation to Arrowhead Stadium. And I remember thinking, man, that's incredible that he can speak to 80,000 people the way that he did. And then when they introduced the New York Giants into the stadium, you know, usually Chiefs fans will boo the opposing team. You know, it's just part of the sport. But everybody in Arrowhead was on their feet with a standing ovation. And when the New York Giants came out onto the field at Arrowhead, they might as well have been at a home game, because the feeling inside that stadium was that the New York Giants on that particular day, at that particular moment in time, was America's team. And I remember being overcome with emotion and really feeling like, you know, this transcended the sport. This transcended this division between these teams, and that oceanic feeling that Freud talked about washed over the stadium. And I remember being overcome with emotion about how powerful it was for us to cheer the New York Giants as they entered Arrowhead. And I, to this day, I went to New York just a couple months ago, and to walk down there to Ground Zero, I've been there, like I said, every year, so I've watched the development change. Alexander Hamilton's grave is at St. Paul's Cathedral, which is right across the street from it's sort of a pilgrimage that I do. I'll stop by and see the grave marker. And St. Paul's Cathedral was not touched when the towers came down. Buildings on all sides was damaged, but that cathedral was left untouched. And see the progress that they've made now, to see the new building that's erected, to see the hope and promise that we can't be beat with physical violence, that our way of life is an idea. It's when we say the Pledge of Allegiance or we salute our troops, it's much more than nationalism. It's this republic that we believe in because it represents these ideas of liberty and freedom and justice for all. And I think that especially when we deal with immigration and people who come to America and make America their home and they become Americans, what also surprised me about the tragedy on 9/11 in 2001 was the outpouring of support from the international community.
Yeah.
The people, whether you were an immigrant in America or you were in another country, everybody felt that feeling that we all had that day. I remember seeing streets with nothing but American flags lining both sides, and that patriotism that isn't just verbiage, but it actually is something that you can almost transfer to one another when you're feeling it, you know, that love for country and that love for the way of life that we have, which is why that last debate bothers me so much. And I don't want to get back into that, but that's what bothers me, is that we value liberty and individual sovereignty, and we put we place the citizen of this country at the foremost of the Bill of Rights. We go through each right that's in the Bill of Rights in our Constitution, and the citizen is the one being protected, not the powers of the government. The powers of the government are enumerated in the rest of the Constitution, but the first 10, the Bill of Rights, are for us, are for the people of this country. And when our soldiers go over and they fight in these wars to keep us safe from regimes, and, you know, I didn't see the president's speech. I'm going to hopefully, you know, catch it on C-SPAN tonight. But I know he was talking about dealing with ISIS and how we handle that. And there are men and women who have to go over to a strange place and deal with that so that they don't come over here and deal with us. And that sacrifice is immeasurable. And the freedom that they're protecting, the ideal that they're protecting, it transcends a lot of the debate that we have in here. And it's why we're proud to be Americans. It's why when we have days like today, September 11th, becomes sort of a national holiday, that it means something, that it's important to pass on to our children why it's important.
You know, in the when the 9/11 2001 attacks happened, I was engaged to be married. And a few months before that, I had gone through a number of old photos, back when a photo was something you took with a camera and printed onto high-quality paper, as opposed to everything we do with our phones these days. But and the idea was, for the wedding, there were going to be photos of me growing up, of my former spouse growing up, and then of the two of us together. And I didn't realize this until the run-up to my wedding in 2002. But one of the photos I had set aside in probably July of 2001 was of my brother and I from a trip to New York City with our parents in 1994. It was a shot of me wearing a t-shirt with an American flag on it, of all things, next to my brother on the Staten Island ferry with the World Trade Tower in the background. And I had set that aside in July or August of 2001 for the wedding, having no earthly idea what was going to wind up happening.
How symbolic it would be.
And I got to tell you, it gave me more than a chill when I ran across that in the run-up to the wedding. You know.
Well, I'm glad that you and I had a chance to discuss September 11th. I'm glad that the senator from the 15th.
I'm very glad he did.
Brought that up. I think it's important for us to have that recognition. Now, it doesn't detract or take away from the unfortunate circumstance that's occurred here tonight in our chamber, and what it means for our Senate family. Do we have an idea at this point in the evening what we're going to still try to accomplish? Any work? Are we going to? Because, you know, you and I, we can switch and start talking about Ferguson. We can talk about what transpired there from an international perspective, and we can talk about militarization of the police. We can talk about all sorts of things. You've got a book. I've got a book. We can spend the next 6 hours discussing things. I'm not sure anybody listening online is going to stick with us that long. But I'm not looking to give this floor up until we figure out.
And actually, I think, with due respect to the pro tem, I actually believe I may be the one holding the floor. I believe I'm the one he recognized. I believe so. Yes.
Why don't we do this? Why don't the senator from the 11th has offered to chime in on the circumstances, and I think it's appropriate for any senator in our caucus who would like to be heard about what has transpired this evening. Maybe I can figure out what else we're going to try to accomplish.
Yeah, before I let you go, let me suggest this. I'll be happy to inquire the senator from the 11th. For the moment, I'm reluctant to give up the floor under the circumstances. That said, for members of the body who may be listening, I meant what I said about visiting with our minority leader. We do have House bills that have come over. There are some budget bills. Talk to her about what may or may not still be possible at this point. But in any event, but with that,
I just want to say one more thing before we depart. You know, I'm hopeful that this is an isolated occurrence that is specific to veto session and is not a harbinger of things to come for the legislative session. This did not happen in the course of policy debate in the legislative session. We were not on amendments. We were not trying to perfect legislation. And I'm hopeful that this is a circumstance, that this has occurred, and that we can work our way through that circumstance with folks who want to come up with an agreement on what the next session is going to look like. I'm hopeful for that, and I'm because this is a great place to work, and I don't want to wake up every day and spend my energy on how to make it more difficult.
Well, I think
it's hard enough to pass legislation. DC is already gridlocked. We don't need to gridlock this chamber in this state, but we cannot allow what just happened to continue without a firm and clear understanding of what is going to happen.
That's exactly
in the
right.
Next session.
This ain't the House. And look, there are reasons why the House does and should employ the PQ. Seemingly every time you turn around, although I'll tell you, the number of previous question motions in the House has been climbing steadily over the years to the point now where, you know, it's triple digits in any given session. With that, tell you what, why don't I let you go?
Yeah.
Why don't
I, you know what? I want to talk to a member of the majority real quick about...
Got it.
Mr. President?
I have the floor, though.
Okay.
Respectfully, that's all the questions I have for you, Senator. Mr. President, may I inquire the Senator from the 11th?
Oh, I was going to inquire of Sylvie.
I believe so, Mr. President. I believe I was recognized.
Do you care?
What's that?
To inquire of the Senator from the 11th?
Did. Yes.
Is the Senator from the 11th in the chamber? He does not appear to be. There he is.
Okay. All right.
Senator from the 11th, let you get to your desk. Would you accept an inquiry from the Senator from the 1st? He does. Proceed.
Senator, thank you for joining us. I had the sneaky premonition that you might be available to visit. This morning.
Yes.
You know, the day began, and you may have been in the chamber at that time with the Senator from the 15th noting that the clock has struck midnight. We are now in the early hours on the anniversary of September 11th and the attacks of 2001 and 2012 on that date. And I wanted to start by offering you the opportunity to share your thoughts, memories, experiences, perspective on what that terrible national tragedy has meant to you and what your own observations and experiences were with it.
I think so many people will be thinking about that day, and it really is something that has changed the outlook of our country and where we've gone. I was sitting on a plane going to Tucson, Arizona at KCI Airport, and they came on and said, yeah, there's been a delay. And the guy next to me goes, yeah, I guess some plane got in a plane wreck in New York. And then immediately after that, they said, okay, get off the plane. I got off the plane, and we understood what was going on, and the world was different from that particular moment. So, it has affected our not only foreign policy, our domestic policy, and it's just interesting that the impact that has changed our outlook of our country the whole time. So anyway, I guess it was all appropriate for the Senator from the 15th to bring it up. I wasn't in the General Assembly at the time, but I guess they were in veto session when it happened too.
Really?
And
that would make sense.
Could,
yeah.
Yeah, if we could inquire someone who was here, but I don't think any of our members were actually in the. Maybe our President Pro Tem was.
You know, Senator Coleman might have been in the body at that time, actually.
Yeah. So, that's all I got to add on that topic, I guess.
Yeah.
I know that you and the Senator from the 7th are kind of also thinking through. The Senate, where we go from here, you know, we're going to have retiring members, the Senator from the 10th, the Senator from Nottoway, the Senator from Franklin, Senator from 24th. Am I missing someone else who's not returning?
Well, the Senators from the 2nd and 22nd, but they have already departed the chamber.
Yeah, 22nd in Jeff County.
You know, for... 12:30 a.m. This remains a hive of activity, does it not? It's. I will say, as compared to the chamber on the other side of the building, it's been my experience that this one is one in which there's at least a little bit less background ambient sound during the course of legislative deliberations. But got to tell you, there's more than zero at the moment. You know,
yeah.
Senator, one of the well, yeah, so the implications of the previous question motion, both for the remainder of this veto session and next year. I mean, look, you've You led the minority caucus in the House. You've taken more than your fair share of previous question motions in that chamber. Right. I don't know, maybe that experience will be particularly helpful or insightful going forward. I don't know. But you do have that experience.
When I was first in the House was when the time when the majority changed. And Senator Crowell was actually the floor leader there. And boy, did he use a lot of PQs. And then our President Pro Tem was the floor leader. But then after that, it really got kicked up. I think when you're in the House, it was even a lot more than when I first started in the House. And I'd be interested to know what they ended up this year. Did they have a record this year?
I don't know, but I have to tell you, it seems as though there's been a record every year of late.
Uh-huh.
There's just an awful lot of that going on in the House. And I will say...
It seems to add dysfunction the more you do it.
What's that?
You think you're moving things along quicker, but it seems to add dysfunction and a lot of resentment and the lack of cooperation that the people of Missouri wants to have.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was hoping that I would not see a PQ in the Senate, but here we are.
You know, I obviously wasn't here in the 80s or early 90s under Speaker Griffin in the House. My impression when Speaker Gaw took the gavel in the perhaps mid-90s after Speaker Griffin left office was that Speaker Gaw had emphasized the value of debate and perhaps de-emphasized the previous question motion. I don't know to what extent it was employed in Griffin's day. I get the impression that it was employed considerably less under Speaker Gaw. And I don't know whether that changed under Speaker Kreider or not. That was getting about to the time that you and I started getting involved.
I mean, from my understanding, each new group of leaders have increased it. So I think I don't even know who the floor leader was during when Speaker Kreider was there, but I think that floor leader used it more than the previous one. So, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I'm not just saying this because I've been in the Senate for the last 2 years, but I think the House has been dysfunctional for the last 2 years. I think maybe a new speaker will bring a lot more function into it.
You know, I have to note, we have, and again, we don't do introduction special guests here in the veto session, but we do have the distinguished House Majority Floor Leader in the chamber at the moment, Representative John Deal from St. Louis County, who is the speaker-elect going forward, and I think we all look forward to working with him in his capacity as speaker in the 98th General Assembly. But I did want to take a moment to acknowledge his presence here, and I don't know whether his work today or yesterday is done or if the House remains in session.
Yeah.
But in any event,
I guess maybe since he's here, maybe we could say our point that going forward, we're going to be committed. I don't want to speak for you, Senator, but to a very functional Senate where we cooperate and we focus on those big issues. We use the procedures, as every senator has a right to do, on those different things, and work with the House. Maybe they can learn from us a little bit about cooperation, how to get some things done. But the only thing I would add to the conversation you were having, I just think the easy, quick solution is not always the best solution. We stopped the debate that the senator from the 10th had on her objection to that bill, stopped her voice with a PQ. So we got done with things, but in the long term, doing more and more of those things doesn't actually increase our effectiveness. And that's the only thing I would want to remind the Senate.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've only been here 2 years. I feel silly saying that a little bit, but it's just natural consequences.
Well, Senator, I have the floor at the moment, and it is 12:35 a.m. I don't know what more we have in store yet this morning, but at the moment, I'm going to elect to break off this inquiry and thank you for joining me in it.
Thank you.
Lament that I found myself compelled to stand up immediately after the last thing that was voted on, but felt it was important to do that and appreciate you and the Senator from the 7th indulging with me in that. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Newton.
Without objection, Senate go to business of resolutions.
The order of business is resolutions.
Mr. President, I have a resolution that has to be read.
Send your resolution forward. Madam Secretary, when the resolution reaches the dais, please read the resolution.
Senate Resolution Number 6, offered by Senator Richard. Be it resolved by the Senate that the Secretary of Senate inform the House of Representatives that the Senate, having been duly convened as provided by Article 3, Section 32 of the Constitution, made no motion to override the Governor's veto of House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 508, House Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Bill Number 575, Conference Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 584, Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 612, Conference Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 615, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 675, Conference Committee Substitute Number 2 for House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 693, and House Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Bill Number 694, when the bills were so called by the President.
Mr. President, I move the resolution be adopted.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Newton. Does any Senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the Senate resolution? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Heard the motion. Senator from Newton renews his motion on the adoption of the Senate resolution. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate resolution. Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, I would ask to inquire of the Senator from the 23rd.
Senator from 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Senator, it'd be my...
Will you let me... Can you tell me what's going on?
Yes, I will, actually. I plan on no further business coming before the Senate. We've got to have a resolution coming from the House and take their message. I'm asking the body, we're going to a technical session tomorrow at 10 a.m. Receive messages, but it's be my intent to do no more business before the body.
Okay, so your last point first. Outside of procedurally what we need to do to get out of session, you do not plan that we will have any other override attempts?
We will not have any other override attempts, no more business for the body. It'll be a technical session, which just a couple of us here. I mean, other members are welcome to be here.
And it's your understanding that there are Senate bills that the House has not acted on that they do not intend to act on until tomorrow.
That is what the majority leader told me a while ago, that there are Senate bills that they haven't acted on. They're going to come back tomorrow, and they'll send us their resolution about what they cannot override, and we have to have a resolution before we go sunny day.
That's why, since only those procedural, messages moving back and forth, resolutions back and forth, there's not a need to cast, we won't be casting another vote, and so that's why a technical session would be sufficient for tomorrow.
We will not be casting any other votes. That's
okay.
Right.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate your explanation.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, would you inquire the Secretary if the correct motion is to stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning for a technical session? Is that the correct motion?
The Secretary has motioned affirmative.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand adjourned till 10 a.m. tomorrow. What is the date tomorrow? I lost her.
11th.
September the 11th for a technical session at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Newton. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. this day.